Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
You're obsessed with her, and you're obsessed with her daughter!
All right, easy, Geraldo.
Welcome back to Horror Queers. It's a special edition because, of course, it's the 10th anniversary of Scream 4, and we couldn't let it go by without acknowledging it.
Consider it a preview of coming events, Sydney.
Right. Yes.
No one ever gets to quote Scream 4. It's really fun.
Right? Yeah. Because in a lot of ways, I think this is still a bit of the bastard stepchild of the franchise. Like, people don't like 3, but then people feel like, oh, well, 4 is just that one that came afterwards.
Okay, yeah, so we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. So everyone, we are not doing an episode on Scream 4 right now. If you have been following the show for at least, well, a couple months or so, you know that we do a Scream film on basically our anniversary every year, so every January. So while we will be doing a full episode of Scream 4 in January of next year, we just thought we had to come in here and talk about for a little bit how much we love Scream 4, because we do love Scream 4, Joe.
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the things that we wanted to acknowledge is that I know in your case, Trace, you have found a lot of comfort in Scream 4 this year.
Okay, honestly, not even me. It's my husband. Like, I swear to God, he's like us. He actually thinks, well, maybe used to think Scream 2 is the best entry in the franchise. And he's been doing a deep dive into, like, because the thing with Scream 4 is, like, you know, it had a bunch of troubles during production. There's a lot of tampering by the Weinsteins, and it's a lot of cut footage, alternate scenes, blah, blah, blah. And he's been going on this deep dive of, like, fan edits of the film, like, putting together the deleted footage and watching different versions that prove that editing makes a world of difference when you're watching a film.
I just think it's significant that, you know, during dark and troubled times, it's kind of fun and it warms my soul a little bit to know that you've been watching this movie a whole bunch. And it's something that I think a lot about, too, you know, particularly as we anticipate Scream 5 next year and how everybody's hoping mm-hmm. that Kirby comes back or hoping that Deputy Judy will come back with her lemon squares and so on.
I love the taste of ass lemon squares. So do you remember what you thought when you, because you saw Scream 4 in the theaters, right? You were one of the few people, I mean, few. It made like $37 million domestically, which was a huge drop off from the first three films.
I was so mad at that opening weekend number. But yes, I was there. Yeah. I was representing. I was so fucking excited because I legitimately didn't ever think we'd get another Scream film.
Yeah. And that's how I was too.
I was admittedly a little disappointed because I felt like something hadn't come together correctly. And it wasn't until later that I found out how much it had been tampered with.
So, okay, I mean, again, we're not going to go into too much detail about this, but have you warmed on it since? Like, have you watched it since?
Yes, and I particularly find the deleted scenes to be illuminating because it gives you a glimpse into what could have been. Because you mentioned the Weinsteins, but also the MPAA, of course, had their fingers into this, which,
oh yeah,
again, is shocking to me. It's 2011, like, let it fucking go. But I've really come around to it.
Yeah, I have too, and I think a lot of other people have too. You know, it's one of those things where in the past, I mean, again, we're on the 10th anniversary of this film. In the past 3 to 5 years, I've been seeing so many, like, oh, Scream 4 is actually really good takes. And I'm like, well, there's not really an actually that needs to be put there, but yeah. Sure, have at it.
Oh, you mean something that we knew all along? Fuckers.
I was 22 when the fourth film came out. And it's the first date that my husband and I, like, went on when we were officially a couple, you know, because when I was 22, we still use that terminology. Oh, are we official yet? I was at the midnight show and I knew something was up immediately when, like, the theater was maybe a quarter full. But we had a blast. I mean, I have really liked this movie from the get-go, and it is definitely one that I've grown to like and love more and more in each subsequent viewing. And like most of the films in the franchise, it's a bit ahead of its time in the subjects that it's tackling.
Oh, yeah. I vividly remember people critiquing the film for kind of the way that we talk about Scream 3 and the voice modification technology, where people saying like, oh, the idea that people would film murders is just ridiculous. I can't believe that this film would try to make us believe. And then it's like,
yeah. No, it's oddly prescient, and I'm expecting the same kind of reaction to Scream 5, like whatever it's going to do. Like, I'm sure people are going to be like, well, that's not really realistic. And it's like, well, you know what? There are four films prior to this that show that it can predict the future. That's what this franchise does.
Yeah, exactly. I will say, I know a lot of people have gravitated to like Jill Roberts as the ultimate villain. Like, people talk about Stu's mom in number two, and then they talk about Jill Roberts as like another really iconic villain in the franchise. But I feel like it's really easy to dismiss a lot of the other things that are working well in this film. And I do want to give a shout out that my mind was blown with the opening. Because I, you know, you go in thinking, oh, they're going to kill one of the original three. And then it just introduces this bevy of stars. Because I remember when the film was shooting, they listed the cast. And I thought, oh my God, they're, you know, they've got Anna Paquin. They've got Kristen Bell. They've got Amy What's-Her-Face from... Friday Night Lights. And you just think like, oh, how are they going to appear? And then all of these actresses appear in that first, what, like 5 to 10 minutes?
I actually would love, again, I know we're not doing like Scream 5 prediction, but I would actually love it if like the Amy, not Amy T. Garden, because she's dead, but like, okay, like Lucy Hale from Scream 4, but like whatever actress she's playing, be it herself or like Jane Doe actress, appears in Scream 5 and it's like, oh my God, you're the actress from Stab 7 or Stab 6 or whatever.
Which one was the one in space?
You know, the opening, it's really, really good. I do prefer the alternate opening because it's actually like really disturbing. The only issue is it was switched out because there wasn't a phone call in it. And they were like, well, we gotta do a phone call. So they did reshoots. And it's just little things like that. I mean, one of the things that always stands out to me about Scream 4 that most people don't like, and I don't even think it's good per se, is Jill's mom, who's like this kind of kooky, like she has that line that's like, I have scars too. Nobody asked about my scars. But there's deleted footage where it's like after Olivia's death, she walks out and she's like, oh, I'm sorry. I just took a bunch of pills and I was drinking wine. So it's made clear in a deleted scene that she has a lot of issues with booze and pills. But as it stands in the film, it's just like she's just this kooky character that makes no fucking sense with everything else that's going on.
Oh, yeah. And I love that actress. It's still pandemic time, so I'm completely spacing on her actual name. But I'm like, oh, it's President Roslin from Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
And she's amazing. But then in this movie, you think, oh, well, that's not a very memorable role. Like, it's not very good. And yeah, she shows up a bunch in some of those deleted scenes. And you realize, oh, there's a bunch more to this character and a bunch more to a bunch of other characters in the film, too. And just for pacing issues, for gore issues, this movie really did get hacked to ribbons.
I mean, and it's interesting because I think it's the shortest film in the franchise. Again, I don't have it in front of my face, but I think it's about hour 45. And there is a good 15 minutes of deleted scenes you can add back into this movie. And I'm a little surprised they didn't, considering that Scream 2 is a full 2 hours long. So it does feel like a missed opportunity. I would love to see, like, again, like an official recut footage, like film, but unfortunately, because Wes Craven has passed, I don't think we're ever going to get something like that.
No. And I think what we're left with is things like fan edits, like what Ari has discovered. So I do think as we move closer to our full length episode on Scream 4, that's actually one of the things I'm going to be checking out, is seeing how the film could have looked based on what people have been able to glean from those deleted pieces, just to see if it makes the film more whole.
I'm not someone who cares or gives a shit about fan edits, to be honest. And I wouldn't have watched this if my husband had been like, I found this fan edit, it's really good, let's watch it together. And I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Okay.
It's worth watching. I mean, again, they're worth seeking out. Some of them are gems, some of them are not. But it's just nice to see such a... Because you don't see this with the other films, right? Like, you see people like... Everyone has their favorite Scream film, especially in the queer community. Everyone loves this franchise. But I feel like 4 is now the one that's just getting talked about so much. And I don't know if it's because it came out for a new generation. As much as we dislike the TV show, I do think that we have that show to thank for a new generation of fans who probably got into the film series later. I don't know. I'm just fascinated by this new discourse around Scream 4, which I, at the time of its release, thought it was doomed to just be a forgotten sequel.
Yeah, and it'll be really interesting to see if the chatter kind of continues as we head into Scream 5 and people realize, oh, I've got to do my marathon rewatch before the new film, because we don't know how this film is going to feed into the events of the new film. Like, we can safely predict that her trio, because we know that they're coming back, you know, obviously their narrative journey throughout 4 is going to be feeding into whatever happens in 5, but we don't know if there's going to be more to it than that. Like, will the killers be referencing Jill Roberts? Will her viral celebrity that ends the film, will that come back into play in some way? We don't know. So it's really exciting to think that Scream 4 is actually going to be a big piece of the conversation.
That's something too. I've always, like, Jill's self-mutilation scene at the end of Scream 4 is something that I always feel like gets a lot of laughs. Like, people are like, oh, it's just really unintentionally funny. And I always found that really interesting because I find it genuinely upsetting if inherently watchable, because it's just like, oh my God, like, this is a person who has cracked and is mutilating themselves for the sake of fame. And while it's funny to see her run into that picture frame and like flop down to the ground, it's also like really upsetting, and it bugs me that it has that legacy. But again, I think people are just coming around to it now, so I hope that with this anniversary people give it a second or third or fourth or tenth look, and obviously check out our full-length episode in what, 8 months?
Oh my God.
9 months?
Who could tell? Yeah. Well, with that said, that seems like a great place to wrap up this special mini-sode edition. But folks, we'd love to hear from you. What are your favorite parts or scenes or characters from Scream 4? And how do you think it'll fit into the upcoming film?
Agreed. Let us know. And I should have had a quote. I don't need friends, I need fans, Joe.
There it is. All right. Well, let's cross out this mini-sode and leave it at that.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform, or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM podcast network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.